Give your home a beautiful makeover with flooring options from Menards. Update your room with flooring from Tarkett. From easy-to-install sheet vinyl, waterproof vinyl plank, to durable laminate flooring, Tarkett has the perfect style for you. Grovewood laminate flooring is stain, scratch, and dent resistant and designed with busy families in mind. Save big money on our wide variety of flooring options in-store or on Menards.com for more great deals now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. A memoir of a double life as a mafia enforcer and a Department of Justice informant, taking down corrupt cops and politicians. Aidan Gabor was still a teenager when Department of Justice agents approached him with an ultimatum: spend his life in prison for racketeering, embezzlement, extortion, and conspiracy to commit murder, or become an undercover agent. Conflicting Loyalties is a sharp, honest memoir in three parts: the bloody life of a mob soldier from outside the family, the death-defying paranoid existence of an informant bringing down corrupt politicians and police departments from the inside, and unexpectedly finding peace late in life through the Baha'i faith while coping with an ALS diagnosis. Conflicting Loyalties is a visceral tale of a man who gambles with his own life in order to save it, dodging his fate while searching for an identity, a father, and a family. The book that we're featuring this evening is Conflicting Loyalties: My Life as a Mob Enforcer Turned Department of Justice Informant, with my special guest author, Aidan Gabor. Welcome to the program, and thank you very much for this interview, Aidan Gabor.
Thank you so much, Sam. I'm looking forward to talking all about the book.
Thank you so much. First off, for anybody that's listening at all, your voice has been disguised doing some sort of modulation to your voice, and also that the names have been changed in this book, like you say, to protect the guilty. So 99% of the names that we will be naming are fictitious to protect yourself and other people as well, you say. Let's talk about, initially, as you do here, take us back to when you were 16 years old, your prospects as an athlete, where you were and what kind of town you were in New Jersey, and about the city that you write that was run by mobsters and street gangs, a breeding grounds for criminals, and heroin flowed in and out of the ports. Tell us about your early life, your background, your parents, and how you became involved with mobsters and street gangs yourself.
Thank you, Dan. My life started, I was a typical teenager. Town was a typical town for nowadays. I was more of an area. The gangs really didn't come into our area because it was more Italian and ethnic area like that. We had our own ourselves. It was just a normal town like it is today. Right? I played sports. We did things outside. You know, we had activities. It started out where it was my father was doing things. And even though we were Hungarian, we weren't Italian, my dad still worked with the guys, and we would grow up and have like family dinners and bedside with the kids, being typical things. And in that type of environment, you had to prove yourself, you know, either be a wolf or be a sheep is the way it is. So I got a lot of scuffles, a lot of older boys. I was able to hold my own. We really, the street gangs came out every day. It wasn't that much with street gangs. But as far as my younger life, I came into working. We just ride our bikes. Hey, drop off this envelope to this person. And if it don't look, just take it. You might give some bring it, just bring it back. We did it. I would ride my bike and drop stuff off, and nobody messed with us. And we would, you know, get it, return it, and then you'd get our money from them. We thought great. And we'd run to these stores, the candy stores, and pick up candy and stuff. And it just worked out for there. As I got older, I proved myself to, I can get in fights and not care about me hurting anybody. And I defended myself over the older boys. I could, I was not a small for my age. I was be considered very big for my age. And that just how it was growing up there.
You talk about that you weren't a small guy, and you also were exposed to violence. So you weren't shy at all when that happened and that occurred. You didn't feel too much in terms of regret or remorse at anything or anyone that you may have hurt. So you got the attention of this person that you say that when you played football, this guy was in the stands. He knew your father. You knew him. And then so that's how you became involved. And then you impressed these people with your predilection for violence or being able to be not afraid to do some harm to somebody. And you certainly had the skills and you had the size and the ability to intimidate. You say you talked about your development, then you were a good car thief. Tell us about your ascent into this crime family and tell us what it was really like.
Honestly, I started when I was 11 years old, like I said, riding a bike, and I just moved my way up. And yes, violence was all around us. And I mean, the first time I saw somebody was just getting the crap kicked out of them. They're beating the shit out of them. And I just kind of looked, and I was told, Randy, he goes, don't worry about him. He's nobody. Kind of laughed about it. And I walked away, you know, at that point. And then a couple more times was kind of happening, and he'd say, no, they're nobody. And he's like, hey, what do you think? Improve yourself? Do you think you could do something like this? And I kind of laughed. I said, well, it's better, you know, it sucks to be him, better him than me. And the guy, he mouthed it off a little bit, and I didn't grab him, brought him across the room, and we're beating, I mean, I just beat the living shit out of him, too. And they're like, pull me up, don't kill him. You know, hey, you know, shoot, that's bad business. But the point, I was on the scene, but I didn't realize you'd be like this. And I'm like, I'm sorry. He goes, no. And it worked your way up to, he goes, I got some other stuff for you to do. And I would go around, and I was with, I guess you'd call like a trainee. His name was Dominic. And he took me over, but he was an ass. Him and I really, we never really got along. And he was talking, and the first thing I learned walking around looking is when you respect each other. It's when you don't respect it, it starts fights. And most people, if they own something, you're just doing a point. And but the really bad fights are amongst themselves or much other crews. When they're poaching in our area, that was a problem. And we would rectify that right away. But growing up, when he would be, Eddie would be in the stands, and, you know, he grew up more a father figure. My father was hardly ever around. He was working, and he still did stuff with Eddie, but he did other things. But Eddie's looked at me, and he saw something, and he said, you know what, let's go. This kid doesn't have any remorse or anything. And, you know, eventually, later on in life, I was told that I don't have empathy for anybody. I don't care as long as it's not family or friends. If it's a family or friend member, then we have a problem. Other than that, I didn't care. To this day, my wife can't understand when we watch movies, somebody getting hurt. And I laugh. And to me, it's funny. I grew up with that, seeing that. And I had no qualms about beating up anybody or beating the crap out of anybody. And growing up on that, there was one incident, and I did put it in the book. There's a lot of things I did not put in the book. Like they say, 90% did not get put in the book, or else we'd be sitting there, we'd have like volumes of pages.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one where a guy was going, and he goes, hey, that's we were eating, and he goes, we're looking outside the window. He goes, that come up, motherfucker owes his money. He goes, yeah, he owes me like 18, 20 G's. So I go running out, and I'm beating that. I start kicking the crap out of this. I grab him one hand. I tell him, get some Dominic Jordan. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm still eating a sandwich.
Yeah.
He goes, damn it. I'm just going to call you Sandwich. I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't like the name, but that's what he started calling me.
Yes, this is a guy that he comes up as a character later on, according to you. His name is Dominic. So he didn't really, he was envious or mistrusting of you, but the guy that you were working for, Eddie, trusted you, took you under his wing, and you became his personal enforcer. So you proved yourself, and he trusted you, and you were involved in this crew, and you were still very, very young. You graduated high school, and you had plans. You were good in football. You were a good football player, and you thought that might be your only shot at college, since you said you had problems in school. You suffer from dyslexia. And so tell us what happens with this crew, what kinds of things this crew was involved with and that you were involved with as a result. Tell us about some of the things, the crimes and the things that were involved with this crew and what happens.
Like I said, the crimes you mostly did, they were really, it was prostitution, racketeering, you loan shark, and then you would bet on the, sports betting and all that. As far as drugs, Eddie's like, he did not, no, we did not do it. When he caught you in that, you were in dire straits. He said, leave that for the gangs and let them ruin their neighborhoods. We're not going to touch that. We have other things. Let's get cars. So we'd zip cars. And I mean, I was good at it. You just go in back in the day and you see a nice BMW or something. You can run and you can pop the lock and put the wrench or the screwdriver and you can go. And there's a couple of times, there's one I took off. And somebody said something, I hit him a couple times, told me didn't see a fucking thing, and he never heard anything. Another time I was going, and the cops came behind me, and I was able to elude them. And I'd bring it in and drop off the cars, and they would take care of it, and you got pretty good, nice little stipend every time you bring one in. I didn't do too many of those. I only did maybe five. I was more of like, hey, this guy owes money. Let's go see what you can get. I mean, give him a reason to think about what he owes that he needs to pay on the points. And that was really what I did. Of course, now, as far as Dominic, I don't know if he envied me. He was really Eddie's number two. I came in and I was a punk. And I think he looked at it as me, when I was younger, as scuffles I'd get in. And, he would talk shit to me and I just wouldn't tap it. I just walk away. And one time right. He did, he kind of hit me. And I took a pipe and I went nice one. And I hit him. And then he looked at me with these eyes. And to this day, I can never forget these eyes. And he was going to go pull on me. And that's when Eddie said, that's enough. We had a little old guy in the shop that was always in there. And he grabbed him. He said, you know what? Don't. You know, we want to mess with me. And he's like, no, sir, no, sir. More scared of Diddy, but I really didn't talk about him in the book. It was more like later on, he realized that I think I was a good ally rather than against him. But it was one of those, like, never trusted me. And because I was not Italian, I was Hungarian, and I don't know if he looked at it differently because of that, but I knew I couldn't go other than enforce things. And as far as everybody talks about with the murders, anything like that, it was bad business. You didn't do things. If somebody owed you money and you did something to them, what are you going to get? That was the whole thing. Most of the things, bad things happen, we hit amongst other crews and ourselves. That was where more things were. And as far as things that happened, we weren't rocket scientists. We had what was available to us. And, ours was it was basically a garage. So whatever you'd have around the garage is what we would use and things. You brought guns to just keep people in check. And then you'd use other optics to get your point across, as you would put it. That was almost every day, if not every other day thing growing up. And then when the FBI and all that started getting in and everybody came up and he's like, we got to go. I'm leaving. And he's like, you need to go. And you've never been arrested, and all this. You need to go to college and get yourself straight and take care of what you need to take care of, which is you and your family. And I'm going to do what I have to do. Right. I'm like, yes, sir. And I looked up to this guy, and a lot of people are saying, oh, you have somebody that's like, your mentor. And mine happened to be a very violent person. And, I realized that today. But back then, it was awesome being that, because you had a lot of respect. And to this day, I don't like being disrespected. And I learned that growing up. I've gotten a lot of fights being who I am and my short temper, and basically, I'm getting better at it. And he came to football and all that, and I did. I went in on a scholarship, and they came in, and they gave me an ultimatum. And it's not that I didn't go undercover. I didn't do undercover. I was not undercover. I went in as an informant. Basically, what they say is we're sending you in because they're going to trust you. They know you. And I'm going to your town. You're going to do this in your town. They're not, and you're going to be by yourself. So if something goes wrong, they ain't going to be there to help you. So, and he even said, the one looked at me, he even said, if something happens to you, we'll be okay with it. You know, I'm going to let you know that if something, but your choices are pretty much limited here. And I kind of thought, I had to think about it. I thought, you know what? Yeah, I'll do it. And that's how it started, doing that. When I went and did the first, you know, I had to get on. They would give me a little help, but I had to get on so they wouldn't know. And usually the DOJ would run with the FBI. But when I was younger, and they knew, I used to see guys in the shop or around there that were G-men. Because one guy was sitting there, I go, and I see his badge. I go, you're a G-man? And he's like, yeah, let me look at the badge. So, you know, they knew that. So they said, no, if you see one, don't, they're not with us. We're not, they have nothing to do, they don't know anything about you. This is just undercover. You're an informant. That's all. And they gave me money. I got paid well for it. You know, they said, party yourself out of school. You got to look like you partied yourself out of school. And I would get, you know, first time they gave me a grand and I went and partied. I did what they did. I mean, pissed my father off. I didn't tell him. I told my parents. The deal's off and we're all going to jail. And, you know, being 18, I'm stupid. I believed them.
In the introduction, we talk about that they threaten you with that the crimes you were associated with this organized crime crew, that racketeering, embezzlement, extortion, and conspiracy to commit murder. So they threaten you, and you said you were 18, you didn't know any better. You asked for a lawyer, but they said we couldn't protect you. So this must have been a difficult decision because you thought that they would at least be asking you to turn evidence on the people that trusted you and were took you in as a family.
When they came and told me, they had all kinds of stuff. Like that's what they were telling me. You know, you're going to go to jail. There's no way he could protect you. I was young, and you know, not to this day, I know that there was nothing they could have proven that I did. They just showed me pictures. And being dumb, I didn't know. I'm going to be honest. I didn't know. And, you know, eventually I figured it out. That no, there's no fucking way that's legit. Because I was never arrested. Never really put anything in their ceiling. But that's what they said. You're doing an informant. And I'm going to say this to this day. I never informed on the crew or anybody of that nature. I went after bad police officers and politicians. Never once. And they asked, well, what about this? And they go, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You know, those are wrong answers. I'm not going to answer because I would never betray those guys. They were my family and mentor growing up. As far as seeing these, doing this with the priest, I saw them doing the bad things. And in my head, I used to think, okay, I know I was an ass and did bad things, but I knew that seeing these guys supposed to be protecting, you know, and you already protect and serve, and they were doing bad things, taking money, doing these bad things. And I thought to myself, that's bad. That's worse than what you're going against what you said you shouldn't go against.
Mm-hmm.
You're not having pride. And yes, I did what I did when I was younger, but we knew what we were doing. We weren't told to protect anybody. We protected our area, I guess you can say, our neighborhoods, but we didn't. Police officers are different and politicians are different. They were supposed to help people. And when you see not help people, in my mind, I thought I was doing the right thing.
So let's talk about how you become involved in being a police informant, of all things.
Yes. They wanted me to go and they said, we have this thing. We want you to go check on this guy. You might even know him. He's a police officer, but supposedly he's committed murders and for a coup. And I'm like, oh, great. And he's like, okay, you got to go do this. And they want you, but you know, like I said, you get out of school. You just go on, you got to get on your own. We'll get you as far as we can. But this has to be on your own because nobody can know what's going on. So I went and tested. I got on the department and they told me the guy's name is Terry. And he's like, get friends with this guy, become friends. So, I mean, it took several months or a year before he really comes because he was more of a loner. And eventually he got in. Then we realized, because I know who you are. And I'm like, and you do? Because I've seen you before. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember. I had no clue who the guy was. He said he'd seen my, I had no clue. And he said, well, would you be the cop? Because really, do they know about what you did? And I'm like, I don't advertise it. Why should I? I'm not bragging about it. I go, that was bullshit things. Like, oh no, man, that must have been awesome working the crew. So we just started drinking and went out, and we would go out and party. We go to the restaurants and drink. And then he'd bring his wife, and she was very good looking. And eventually we became good friends. This was the first one. And eventually he got to open up to me. And he said, you know, I wanted to get the crew so bad. I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, you know, I'm doing things that he goes, I've done a couple things. And he goes, I don't think you talk bullshit because I know about you being younger. I'm like, well, what the fuck? I don't. What are you talking about? And he told me what he was did. And I'm like, thinking to myself, are you shitting me? In my head. And I'm like, I just kept playing with him. And I'm like, oh, yeah, really, yeah. And he's telling me. And I guess eventually I went over there and we went out with a couple of times. His wife used to tag along and she was crying. She goes, I'm sure he told you. I don't know what to write. They threw eat me up inside. I don't know how to do this. I'm like, well, you know, just don't think about it. And then when I got to the guys and they're informants, they just wanted to make, what is the best way we can get these guys? What did they tag? Because we don't want you to testify. Because when you testify, you're one and done. That's it. We can't use you anymore. And I'm like, really? And then they're like, no, we don't want you. We just want the information on which way you're stuck. And I came back, so, you know, bump the wife. He's the one. She's already on the edge. I think she'll topple on this one. But this is what he said he did. And it was funny because every time I see him, he kind of like bump into me. I'm like, dude, I'm not gay. And he says, no, I'm just making sure he got something on. That's really how the first one worked. And then eventually he got caught for, he, you know, the funny part is one of the things he did, he was the first officer I've seen.
Right.
So in something like that, whose fingerprints will be all over the doggone place? Usually the officers that are on scene. So he's trying to get away with the perfect crime. And yeah, they eventually got him with the information that I was able to provide.
You say that you write that he admitted to killing three people. And then you got a call from your lieutenant, was again, oblivious of your undercover work, saying that he had been arrested by the FBI and told you that he was a contract killer. And you had to act surprised and incredulous, didn't you?
Yeah, that was, he called, it was actually a corporal calling me, telling me, and I'm like, really? And he's like, are you shitting me? He goes, yeah, he goes, I don't know what's going on, but they're all over the fucking department. And how's your buddy? I go, I went out with drinks with them, but, you know, he wasn't like a buddy, it's somebody new in the department, because we don't want to really talk to him. I'm like, oh, fuck this shit. And then, you know. They went on, said, I resigned from the department and ended up, they asked me to go to another department, which happened to be my hometown. And I went in there and worked my way to get into there. And in that department, the funny part was, is the commissioner would say to me, he's somebody I knew and somebody I knew it through Eddie. And he said, you know, you'll be going, you'll toe the line. I'm like, yes, sir, you know, you'll toe the line. You know, I know you'll be what needs to be done. You'll listen to what we have to say because, you know, we know about your youngerness. I'm like, yes, sir. And that's how I kind of got onto that department and then worked from there, taking on those officers. And then there was also a politician that was involved that I ended up grabbing, who I knew more personally than the others.
You also talk at the Bluffs at the precinct. You're a good friend. You single out two people, Sam Schwartz and Donnie Cooper. And Donnie Cooper is a police officer that works at the Bluffs precinct. And you just mentioned that you name him Paul Ciolino in as the mayor of this Bluffs. And tell us how you know this mayor of this little town, and tell us about Donnie Cooper.
Oh, Donnie, I grew up with Donnie. He worked there. He used to tell me, you know, when I got him, he said, oh, good, I got my buddy out. No, he's straight laced. Like, the best thing about Don and me is Don is loyal as can be. He's not the sharpest blade in the drawer. We're smartest shark in the door, but we will protect each other. He never really knew about what was going on until later on. And he kind of put it together and he's like, are you shitting me? I can't believe that you've been doing this for this long. And wow, what do you need? Tell me. I'll help you out, man. And he helped me out immensely. As far as that's how Donnie, I grew up with Sam. I grew up with my whole time. And Sam was a character all his own. Very smart individual. You know, one of the things I used to say is what he knows more about computers and stuff like that, I knew about violence and crime. It's one of those, he was oblivious to a lot of things that went on. He was more in his glass house. We used to joke, but he's a good friend. And him and Don would really help me out. When I started doing this, eventually you realized me become a police officer. There's a blue line. You don't cross. You don't snitch on each other, because once you do that and they find out you did it, you're like a leopard. And it did get me doing this. So I started taking out these police officers. And as far as the mayor, I married into somebody's part of their family. And that's how I knew him when I was younger, as growing up. And realizing when I was younger, what I used to do, bring to him and everything that was involved with him, I knew, he pulled me a room. And he said, do me a favor and don't talk to anybody. You don't know. I go, about what? He said, thank you. And that would be it. Oh, yeah. I was showing something like we came out and he's like, oh, I've seen Aiden before. I think I may know his father, but I was talking about, is this his father in the picture over here? And it was. And so he knew them through that. And eventually they, I got nothing, but it ate at me to the point. I became an alcoholic. And I used to play Russian roulette. I did it. Can't tell you how many times I did this. I used to wake up screaming at night and they would just go nuts, right? My ex and, like, what's going on? I would see Lady Justice stand there with her flaming sword coming at me that I betrayed everything. And I don't know if you know how that is with police officers, but, I felt bad inside, but I knew I was doing good, that these guys had to get taken out. And, it started off being I was forced to, but towards the end, I knew I was doing right by doing what I was doing.
Let's use this as an opportunity to stop for a second to hear these messages.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Now, let's go back for our audience, because this central figure in this is this Agent Jackson that keeps transferring you and reassigning you. And as you write much later, it's your duty to do this to avoid that prosecution when you were young. And part of that is that you're to transfer. And luckily, you just get together with your buddy Donnie Cooper that you can confide in. But your mission is to bring down some corrupt politicians. And you say that this Paul Ciolino was a friend of yours, but what's your job now? What are you tasked to do?
Same thing, get information on. What are they doing? Are they doing this? We need to know. Where are they doing this at? Where can we get the information? And eventually I'd find out all what they were doing. A couple times I had guns put in my face. As far as with the mayor, he was just arrogant, I guess you can use the word. And I used to know the area he'd been doing it. And I'm like, hey, this is like a work spot. I go, yeah, that's where they're having their conversations. All of them are getting involved in this. I go, there's officers, a lot, 90% of the officers, they have no idea what's going on. I'd say 95%. But I know that there's their commissioner, and I know that it's the mayor and that who's over there doing this. And I tell them where the areas were that they went to look for this and get the information. I got information through it. And then Don would hear things because he'd be in different areas. He'd tell me what they were saying. And Jackass or Jackson. I mean, these guys, they really just, eventually I realized when I started working on first, they couldn't put me in jail. But then I realized I'm doing something good. So I was like, I'm in this now. I can't just stop. I'm in this and I'm in this deep. So either it comes to fruition. It finishes what happens, or I get myself killed. Either one of the two. And I'm going to be honest, man, I wasn't worried about dying. To this day, I'm not. To me, I know it'd be a better place, but at that time, when I had guns put in my face, I had to use my wit and mind to get out of it. I had one time in the station I was going up, and the gun got pulled in my face, and I'm on the bottom part of a stair, going up the stairs, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm looking at this right down the barrel, and I'm like, the fuck is your problem? Well, yeah, you're fucking looking, what's up? You're knocking on us? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck am I going to go do something like that? And he's just like, no, he goes, I don't fucking trust you. And these guys had so much, they could do something like that and say, he went at me with the weapon. He's a bad guy, look what he did when he was a kid. And that's what threw my eye. And I looked at her and go, listen here, asshole. I remember you coming out and then working, doing stuff there. And you wanted to be part of the machine. I was, you were a cock. I was part of the machine. They got rid of you and that would have been, and you knew that. But you know where I did. I was part of the crew that you wanted to be part of. So right now you're just being fucking, you want to be and you're jealous and that you didn't get to do any of these things. And you're going to put on me that you think I'm fucking narking on you fuckers. I can give a shit. I got my own things I'm involved in. And he just looked and laughed. He goes, yeah, I can see it. All right. You know, and we went back up there, and then I went somewhere else, and the commissioner sent me, as I told you, he's towing the line. Don or whatever he's saying. And he came and told me, and I go, okay. And he goes, what the fuck happened? I said, we'll talk about it later. Eventually, I told Don whatever. He goes, you came here, some bitch would have. So, yeah, that's how that part was.
So, eventually, the three of them, the mayor, a guy, a cop, a dirty cop named Jeff Walters, sued him. So, one more, were all indicted for crimes involving heroin and inside information to this gang that was dealing heroin in the community. So now the thing is that you still have other work to do. And what happens after this in terms of events of your life?
Well, after I finish everything at the department and everybody gets starts getting taken down, and then everybody's pointing the fingers at each other, you know, who the fuck did this? You did it. No, you did it. And all that. And I finally just said, you know, Don, I'm going to resign from this shit. Because the fuck is it? You did it. I think like 9 different officers and 4 of us resigned because of it. And because everybody's accusing everybody, now you're basically a leper. And I'm like, you know, they had no clue who did what. They're just doing their assumptions. So I left. And, you know, if it was just me, then they would have figured out. But after the other couple left, I left and somebody after me. And then they asked me to go work at a casino to check on these guys. And the first one I checked on, I went and became, I actually went into security. And I became friends with, you know, the guys over there. He'd meet them because I wouldn't work midnights and he'd have to secure them. He had keys to everything. And I goes, these guys are frat boys. They're just having a good time. What the fuck do you want with these guys? Well, we just want to make sure, you know, casinos are, they're all involved with, I go, there ain't nobody in this thing from any crew or anybody I could see in this. I mean, I go in the back, I would talk to guys and I'd never see anybody or even hear anybody going in there. And they were just, you know, no, we think there is, but there never was. And we're going years. And then eventually somebody came in and they asked me to get information on this one owner. And I went, had keys, I worked midnight. So I got the information. I took pictures of it and gave it to him. And that's eventually something happened with him. And I ended up basically just, I always thought, hey, eventually maybe I could become working for them and doing an informant thing. And they just said, you know, thanks for everything. We're done. Bye-bye. Here's a stipend. What kind of marriage? And I'm like, wait, what? So I just stayed at the casino and worked there. And eventually I left there.
Just before this or around this time, you get some disturbing news for you. Eddie Tosio, the person you work for, Eddie, is extradited from Portugal and is arrested. Tell us about hearing that news.
Oh, that really pissed me that he got. And, you know, the funny thing is, I remember when I was still working at the department, I got a call and I went to a payphone at a gas station. It was him. And he's like, you know, I'm going to be gone for a long time. I just take care of my son and make sure he's doing all right. Make sure he doesn't fall into this bullshit. So I eventually, you know, I did. I kept in touch with him. But eventually his wife gave the information that they were going to meet. He ended up getting nailed. And he ended up dying in prison. And when I heard about that, I'm like, it was like somebody punched me in the gut. But they, you know, he got caught. I wasn't worried because I know he doesn't talk. So I wasn't worried about anything that was going to happen. But it was my mentor is now getting caught. Now he ended up getting, I want to say, life in prison for everything he done. It was very like somebody, like I said, somebody punched me in the gut. Like I lost not 100%. That's how I felt for a long time after I heard that information.
Yeah, that was hard, you say, right?
Yeah, it was.
You talk about through this book, we didn't get to talk about it, but the fact that you're having children, you and your first wife, Carrie, and then that not working out and dissolving, and your drinking and your nightmares that you encountered and increasingly, and then you're split up with your parents, and then your father alluding to some secret with your mother. But let's get back to your work with the police force. You say it was winding down. And then what happens in terms of retribution?
Next bitch towards me is they asked me to go somewhere else. There's nothing that really happened. I felt good about putting these guys and getting them off the department and getting them out where they're supposedly protecting it out. A couple of them working with the gangs, and I'm not a big fan of them, of the gangs at any time. And you know, I felt good about retribution as far as me. I just felt better for doing this. You know, at first I thought, okay, you know, and that's where I got to drinking and the Russian roulette and, you know, Not really. Yeah, I was gulping. I was an alcoholic for a while and trying to hide everything. And the worst part is I was told you couldn't tell anybody. So I didn't tell anybody. The only one I really ever found out was God. And that was towards the end. And that's really a cause that keeping these demons inside, you know, between the demons I did as a child. And I'm honestly, I didn't care. I didn't until a little while until I drank and then started getting these nightmares. And then, like I said, everything started rolling down. I had the kids and Gary and I eventually split, you know, not realizing everything, you know, when you meet somebody young that you're not comfortable until I meet, you know, Sabrina. And I do meet, I guess you could say, the love of her life or who helps me and supports me and pushes me towards spiritually working with learning the Baha'i faith. Right now, like I said, the whole thing of writing the book was therapeutic. And Sam's like, we need to do this. You need to do this. Like, Sam kind of found out later, him and I talked, and he's like, you need to do this. No, brother, you need to. It's just going to help you. And it's brought out a lot of, I've had my terrors. It's starting to get better. But overall, I do feel better inside that I've gotten something out. And I'm going to be honest, I felt like I never did anything in life. I felt like I was a failure. But learning eventually, I would say recently, that the things I've done was helpful towards the community and towards people. And I'm still not comprehending that today, I guess you can say. But as far as retribution, it's more of a, I felt better inside for doing what I did. And they got what they deserved. And that's how I look at it.
Let's use this as an opportunity to stop for a second with these messages.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What I meant in the retribution is that the name Dominic that had nicknamed you Sandwich many, many years ago that didn't trust you in this crew with Eddie now rears his ugly head, according to you, and you get shot. Tell us about this event.
I was out drinking with a couple of friends, it was a hole in the wall, and it was raining, and I was smoking a cigarette, and I was waiting up there, and I started going towards my car, and I heard this pop, and then I just felt heat. I mean, I can't even describe it. It didn't hurt. It just felt hot. And I felt another one. I'm like, what the? And then I saw the flash, and I flipped over my car, and I was able to grab my 9-0. And on my other side of the car, I could hear everything whistling by, and I could just see feet. I just started lighting up, and I just started shooting at feet. And I saw somebody fall, I just shoot them. And also, as I'm on my back, there's somebody comes up around the car, and I just start, and now I remember just start shooting them. And it just disappeared. And up there, at this point, it got quiet, and I just sat there. And really not, no pain, I'm just heat. I just felt burning heat. And I crawled back into my car, and I took off like a bat out of hell. And I ended up showing up at Don's house. And that whole incident, he ended up calling an old friend, a couple of friends of the family, my family, Ducky and Rocky, and when they came in, and they said it wasn't as bad. A couple of them they went through, and he says, we're going to do this. It's going to hurt. And they did it there in his garage, and they took it out, and they basically patched me up and gave me IVs, and I didn't want to go to the hospital. I didn't want anybody to know about it. I'm afraid, and I'm thinking, well, you know, that's what I'm thinking. This is my original thinking. At first, I wasn't sure what it was. Is it just this and that? Eventually, I found out through my contacts that it was Dominic didn't trust me, and he's in prison, and he put a hit on me, I guess you could say. And the funny thing is the area it happened, it was a different department. They didn't have anything. It was like somebody cleaned up the whole thing. Like, it didn't happen, which I thought, when I heard that, it made me feel worse. Now I'm feeling that I'm in Don's basement. What's going to fucking happen? So, I mean, I was gone for 2 weeks. My ex didn't even really, well, she made some phone calls, and Don said, oh, no, he's just doing this. He's got somebody working undercover. Oh, okay. And, you know, it only took a couple of weeks for me to really get to the point where, yeah, it took a long time to really start moving, but they didn't have anything where it was more of, I really didn't have to go through therapy or anything like that. But it was a hard time for a while trying to hide everything. But we ended up, somehow we did it. Don being good, you know, his wife, under just understood everything and he's a very good person. And we ended up, I ended up finding out it was Dominic, but you know, I thought, you know, revenge is my thing to go, but I didn't go down that path because I knew he was in prison. He was going to get out. So I was just like, fuck it. I don't know. And after that, to this day, I keep myself, always have either an ice pick or a gun. I both use Yami 24/7. I don't trust much of anything. And it's hard for me to make friends because of the incident. It's psychologically, you know, it does get to you.
You write about Agent Jackson meeting you. He sees you with a cane. He knows that you are recovering from being shot at and survived. He tells you about this $300 severance. You get about $250,000 after the taxes. And you can get an all-in-one lump sum or you can get it in payments. But Carrie wants the money in one lump sum, and she argues for that. What I think is not really quite clear for our audience, but I will try to make that clear now, is that you had met Carrie, you got involved with Carrie, but at the time you didn't know of the involvement with the mayor, who she called her uncle. So anyway, in this regard here, and it's not in your book, it's not so explained, so I'll ask you, what happens with this money, and how does Carrie cheat the money from you, and where does that money go, you write?
Honestly, I was like, when I was starting to do all this, and this is before I even went to school, I met her at a party. And after I came back and started working, I came back to the area. We kind of hooked back up, and that's how that started with her. And as far as the money, it came in. I want to be honest with you. It was informant. It was getting cash. There was nothing. And what happened to it is we were in a strain at the time. She didn't know. And I said it was for an insurance thing when I got hurt. So she ended up basically giving it to her family. And that was the last straw. I did not like her family. I didn't like anybody in her family. And she had several brothers and sisters. And she gave it to one of her sisters. And I asked why. And I'm like, are you effing kidding me? And she's like, well, she needs it. I go, she doesn't need it. And I'm like, we're going to go, she doesn't need to pay it back. That was the last straw with me. That's where I ended up just leaving. That's where that was. And that's where that ended up, the money disappearing to, that she gave it to her family.
You write about the change in your life, the change in your attitude. And obviously the work that you did was absolutely contrary to the work you did for Eddie when you were young and you were destined for. But you have two sons and a couple of years apart, you write. And then you get a call from your friend, the police officer, Donnie Cooper, and it's a disturbing call. Tell us about the call and who you have to talk to at the station.
My youngest was gone at the time. I wasn't even in the state. And Don calls me, he says, you know what, they're about to jump on your son. I go, for what? They think you're selling drugs out of the garage. I'm like, are you fucking kidding? And so I had to make some quick phone calls, and I ended up going up there, and I had to say, you know what, don't go in, because I have the oldest is special needs, and he's big into knives, and he's not going to back up. He will go after you, and God help you guys take him down. So they ended up, hey, just wait till he leaves the garage to get the dump truck. That's all I said. I just said, don't hit the house because of my other son. And they did. Right. They actually honored that. And it wasn't even him they were left in. It was his buddy. And they ended up arresting him, and he got out of it because he wouldn't have anything on him. And he brought him to show them there's nothing in the garage. And at that time, they'd show him around. They didn't find anything. And that was really the extent of it. But yeah, he called. They were going to hit the house with my son was in there, and I asked. And they actually honored it.
You wanted your son not to go down the path that you had gone, not to become like you had become, a person in a bad situation like yourself, and end up possibly in prison. You didn't want that for your son. You wanted to get him to promise that he wouldn't be involved at all. Then you meet another woman named Sabrina. Your life changes. But more importantly, those nightmares and the haunting nightmares. You learn about the Baha'i faith. You mentioned it. You talked about it. So tell us just briefly about who you meet, and more importantly, this religion that stops those nightmares and gives you a sense of how you could possibly get forgiveness for that past transgressions.
I met Sabrina when we were working together for a while. And I just saw something in her, and she was kind of a bitch. And I kind of liked that. And we just started talking. We got together, and she understood me right off the bat, and she took me for who I was. Not, she didn't know anything about me, didn't know that, and she took me, not being either dyslexic and all that, not being the sharpest blade in the drawer, and just for me, for me. And it just grew, and she always helped me. And then Sam is a Baha'i, and he's like, you got to read these books. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I work for the other guy. I work for the other guy. Don't even bring that. I mean, I was very anti-religious. I was very, there is no God, F that. That's all it means, shit, all this. And then I started reading. And I go, you know what? I sat there one day, and I started reading, and I saw something. I felt something. And I thought, wow, you know, and reading about the Baha'i faith, I've always believed that men and women have always been equal. That's always been me. There's no man, you know, woman subservient to man or anything. I've never believed that. And that's in the Baha'i faith. And I would sit there and Sammy goes, you know, you were always Baha'i, but you didn't know it. And number two is, you can't be perfect. Nobody can. But just be the best Baha'i you can be. And everything that they do, I do. You can protect your family, but don't carry a weapon. I carry it. You know, don't swear. I still swear like a truck driver. Don't drink. I drink a little bit out of that. Medications kind of prevent me from that, you know. But I believe in a Baha'i tree. I believe in everything. And all the whole time, Sabrina backed me. She went with me. She went through classes with me. Even though she's not going to convert, she's staying what she is. She helped me along and followed me away. And it's me for me. And after she found out about my past, when I talked to her about it, it didn't flicker for her. It didn't change her opinion of me. It didn't change anything of me. She says, you are who you are today. And that really got to me. That you are what you are today, not what you were. You know, that was history. You're a better person, and you have been. And with the Baha'i phase, we have all Baha'i. I have a hard time retaining a lot of things still, but I read more every day and learn something new every day. I do 4 times a week classes with the Baha'i phase. And I think overall, I can never, ever pay or do anything that did what I did in the past. I have no way of getting that back. But when I do pass, I go to a different plane and it will start over. I have to pay for what I did, but I start over. And I'll start over as a better person. And that's all I need. That's all I need to believe is that I'm going to start off as a better person. I can never repay for what I've done and what I've been through and what I've done to people and other things. And that I understand. But right now, I just got to go forward and being more spiritual and being a better person and being a better person to society.
And so that's how you can reconcile. You say you've learned you've learned about forgiveness. So that forgiveness extends to yourself. And that's how you can reconcile and move on and just be a better person each day and not have to feel the guilt or not be burdened by the guilt, I should say, as you move on in this new spiritual state, your Baha'i faith.
Yes, sir. I still remember and know what I've done. I realize that I need to just move on. I'm going to be honest with you. It doesn't affect me what I've done. I don't have any regrets. I never felt for things ever. Meeting up people, doing things to people, I never felt any remorse for that. I'm going to be honest with you. But I felt, I know I did something that things I shouldn't have done. And I got to go forward. And every day I work hard and harder to put that aside. I'll never forget it. That's part of my burden. But right now, I understand that I can move forward and be a better person towards my community and towards the world that needs help. That's how I look at it. You know, not everybody's spiritual, but if you learn to be spiritual, you can understand more of yourself and understand that now feel whole. I know I was missing something, and now I feel like I'm not missing anything anymore. I feel whole. I feel warmth in myself, which I never have. And that's me. But I think if the world starts feeling something like this, it would help everybody to understand that there is more to everything other than yourself. And that's how I feel. Yes, sir.
Part of this redemption is the good work that you were forced to do. In your mind, you had no choice, but you did do what they deemed good work in terms of getting close to people and informing on them and getting the information vital for convictions, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I started out not being an unwilling participant, realizing I'm doing good to me and I like doing this. Do I care if something happened? I know I didn't have anybody back there to help me. You know, no, didn't care. But yes, I felt redemption as far as that. And like I said, Sam, the one that said, like I said, to write the book, I felt like I've never done anything in my life. I felt like a failure. But he said, let's do this therapeutically. You might look at yourself differently. And I'm still working on that today.
Yes. It's a very, very fascinating story. I want to thank you very much, Aidan Gabor, for coming on and talking about your book, Conflicting Loyalties, My Life as a Mob Enforcer Turned Department of Justice Informant. I want to thank you very much for this interview. For people that might want to take another look, you have a website, and do you do any social media? How can they take a look further?
Conflicting Loyalties. There's a Facebook account, Conflicting Loyalties. With the Facebook account, there's also Aidan Gabor, Twitter. You go on the Aidan Gabor site, you will be able to look at all the different areas you can purchase the book, sir.
Thank you very much, Aidan Gabor, for Conflicting Loyalties, My Life as a Mob Enforcer Turned Department of Justice Informant. Thank you so much for this interview, and you have a great evening and good night.
Thank you so much, Dan. You have a great time too, sir.
Thank you.